In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
Well, the ballots are all counted and the primary is over. It's time to gather around the winner and do our best to get him over the finish line. I know a large chunk of our listeners probably weren't happy with Newt winning, but remember, politics is a game about moving the ball up the field, and it's a team sport. At any rate, welcome to the I Spy Radio Show, where every week we're helping you get a little more intelligence on big government. It being the week after the primary and with Memorial Day coming up fast, originally when we had booked this show, we wanted to move just a bit away from politics. So we booked two authors to lighten the mood with a special focus on the military. Today we'll talk with Sergeant Greg Stubbe about his book, Conquer Anything, A Green Beret's Guide to Building Your A-Team, a fascinating book on leadership. You know, maybe Republican leaders need to read that. But there has been so much happening this week that we won't drift quite as far away from politics as we had originally intended. Our rights are truly under assault. Our very foundations as a country are under assault. Breaking this week, it's become clear now that our own government agencies use their unelected power to go after a political opponent, including outright entrapment. We talk with Scott McEwen, co-author of American Sniper and a recovering lawyer. You'll hear the convoluted and secret means the FBI used to go around these pesky things like laws and courts just to go after candidate Trump. Where are the Democrats? If they thought it's okay for Obama to use the FBI, NSA, CIA, and IRS to go after Trump, does that mean they'd be perfectly okay with Trump doing that to Kamala Harris or Bernie Sanders? People on both sides of the aisle should be outraged. But here in Oregon, we can't even get 35% of people to vote in a primary. In a democracy, your vote is your weapon. Your ballot is your ammunition. Speaking of which, the Second Amendment is definitely under attack. I'd like to welcome Rob Taylor. He is the state coordinator for the Committee to Preserve the Second Amendment. He also runs Coos County Watchdog. You can get that at CoosCountyWatchdog.com. Rob, it's good to talk to you again.
Well, it's good for you to have me back.
Yeah, and I should mention, too, that you're also on one of our stations that we air on, KWRO. He's a regular guest on Mondays on the Jim Bice Show from 3 to 5, if people want to tune in for that. You know, in Oregon, we've had some real problems with legislators looking to remove some of our Second Amendment rights. They have been chipping away at that with some of these bills that they've slipped in under the guise of protecting people. And now we've got this initiative to get IP 43 on the ballot. This is a ban on so-called assault weapons, and it's supported by our current governor, Kate Brown. Some have said that the way that the initiative written is that it would allow essentially full gun confiscation if passed. It certainly became a big issue in the recent gubernatorial primary and debate about whether a person who was elected governor would enforce it if it became law. What are your concerns about IP 43 and why it's a big concern to you?
Well, it eliminates so many guns in your arsenal. If you're a gun owner and you own any magazines over the limitations of the ordinance, or if you owned any of the guns that are mentioned as a class of what they're calling assault weapons, which really is not a title for or a name for any specific gun. It's just a gun that they put a description to, and it fits a huge amount of weapons out there.
Yes.
And at this point, and I shouldn't say weapons, of firearms, because that's the correct term. And so since many of those firearms are going to be made illegal, there are a lot of people who are very concerned that they're going to become criminals overnight.
Yeah. Well, and we will put IP 43, the text of it, up on iSpyRadio.com if people want to go download that. And it's very disturbing when you start reading through some of the descriptions on that. And it's also disturbing to me in terms of it's very clear that the government gets to keep all of the decent weapons, but the rest of us get like pea shooters.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And the thing is that this law is written in a way that many of us believe that within the next several years that it will face a constitutional challenge and will probably be killed at the Supreme Court. But until then, how many people's rights are going to be violated?
Yes, that's right. And, I think one of the things that, as you look through that, and again, there's just this long, exhaustive list of different conditions and equipment, and they seem to be really opposed to any kind of higher capacity magazines and rifles that have pistol grips. Are there any semi-automatic pistols or rifles that would not be banned under IP43?
I don't know the specifics well enough. I've gone through it, but it's a monstrosity of a bill, which that in itself makes it a scary proposition. But the bill itself, it's so written in some ways so vague, many of us we're still arguing exactly what the law will do. So I'm not sure what's going to be left on the table once this law passes. I mean, my 10/22, it's a little, Ruger rifle. According to this law, that would be illegal for me to own.
Well, what do you think about this bill? Do you think it's an outright gun confiscation attempt, or is it just a foot in the door toward that?
Well, yes, it's a foot in the door, definitely, because they just passed SB 941, where anytime you transfer a gun, and even with between a person-to-person private transfer, you now have to get a background check. And during that background check, they register those guns. Well, now that those guns are registered, they have a list of all of them, and eventually that registration is going to lead to confiscation. And we know this because of practices in the state of New York and the state of Connecticut and other countries around the world.
Yeah, absolutely. So you guys are working right now on this ordinance. It's called the Second Amendment Preservation Ordinance. How does it protect gun rights, especially now that you've got this looming threat of IP43?
Well, it works very similar to the Oregon immigration law. The Oregon immigration law is a state law that allows the sheriff or law enforcement not to participate in any federal immigration process, with the ICE upholding any detainers for their people for suspected illegal immigrants. Well, with the gun law, what it does is it allows a county not to provide any resources or material help to any law that the sheriff determines is unconstitutional. So we're putting a lot of authority in the sheriff's hands, but right now they already have a huge amount of discretionary authority.
Yes.
Yeah, so what we thought is we would tap into that. And so we allowed them the ability to determine whether a law is constitutional or not, which, most people would say that's really part of the judicial branch. So we're combining the two. But the fact is that when it comes down to it, a sheriff at a certain point has to be a jurist. Almost every single one of us in this country has to be a jurist. And we have to look at the laws, and at some point when they violate the tenet of our natural rights, we have to stand up and say, no, we're not going to participate in this action. And, it's something that goes back deep in this country. You can go back to the runaway slave laws.
Yep.
And the jurists who used to nullify that law, they couldn't hardly prosecute anyone in the northern states under this runaway slave act because the abolitionists would stack the jury.
Yep.
So what we did is we thought, let's create a nullification law so that the sheriff can nullify bad state laws or unconstitutional state laws.
Well, and I know that this has already been passed in Baker. I know it's been introduced in Klamath, so this is gaining steam. If people want to find out more about that, head to CoosCountyWatchdog.com, and of course we'll link that up on iSpyRadio.com as well. Rob Taylor, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you very much.
And up next, we'll talk with Sergeant Greg Stubbe, author of Conquer Anything, A Green Beret's Guide to Building Your A-Team. This segment of the iSpy Radio Show is sponsored by Debbie McMillan Homes. If you or someone you know is looking to move into, out of, or within the Willamette Valley, check her out, Debbie McMillan. That's MCM, DebbieMcMillanHomes.com. It's very rare to say a business book is riveting, but our next guest has written a business and leadership book that is truly riveting. I'd like to welcome retired Sergeant First Class Greg Stubbe. He's a medical sergeant who got wounded in Afghanistan, and he's written a business and leadership book on the lessons he learned from his time in the Special Forces. The book is Conquer Anything, A Green Beret's Guide to Building Your A-Team, and I highly recommend it. Sergeant, it's great to talk to you today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. I'd like to start by reading this. It's from the publisher, but it's also from best-selling author Scott McEwen, who is also our next guest on today's show, who wrote this about your book. This is the best translation of how to effectively use the United States military special operations ethos in your everyday work environment. Great military stories combined with life lessons learned bring this book from the battlefield to the boardroom. A great read, and I absolutely agree with that. So talk to us about what that is, the United States military special operations ethos. What exactly is that?
Well, in special operations, it's a heightened state of being a warrior for a cause and serving something greater than ourselves, being willing to sacrifice in that service. And that means overcoming your fear of dying to accomplish even small objectives. Being prepared for that is a full-time job, and being ready to accept that and not fail teammates in arduous conditions in the name of something bigger, it takes a mindset, and you got to live by a creed.
In your book, you talk about the various the A teams there that make up Green Berets. For those in our audience who don't know, what exactly is an A team? How does that differ from other teams within the military? And especially, how is the leadership and command different from other military teams?
One of the first things that always comes to my mind, what's unique about the A team, is that number one, it's a small number of people who are highly trained in specific skills that come together to make a unique capability. Then a very serious difference is that the A-team writes its own plans. Now, the higher command may come up with, you know, what needs to be done on the battlefield. But unlike other units, we don't get handed what the execution plan is. We come up with it on our own based on our own capabilities and our own team dynamics, and then we brief that back to meet what the commander's intent is, staying within the latitude of our restraints and constraints.
You talk about unique skills there within the A teams. Does that mean each person has those unique skills, and that's the only person on that team that has those skills, or are A-teams cross-trained in each other's fields?
Well, the ultimate A-team has 12 soldiers on it, and within those 12, we like to have a minimum of two in each skill, a senior and a junior medic, communications, weapons, communications, and engineers. And engineers, they build things and blow them up.
I think that's important because, you know, if one goes down, you've got somebody that can step in and fill that role. So the team always is moving forward. I've seen you in other interviews, and you say that you don't like the idea of the term wounded warrior because you choose one or the other. And I think that's a really unique perspective. Talk to us about that process, though, of how you came to think that way. Did you have that mindset before you got wounded, or did it arise from the process of healing?
Well, I think in my life, my dad was pretty tough on me, and he said if I was going to find sympathy, it would have to be in the dictionary between a really bad word and syphilis, which isn't a pleasant one either. He told me later on in the hospital, he said, look, as soon as you can, you get on your feet and you don't take anything from anybody, because although sympathy can pay well in the short run, it'll steal your soul from you in the long run. And I think being sympathetic or evoking sympathy, it lowers the common denominator of joy in any room, and it disqualifies you from any legitimate leadership role. So I think it's important that we don't, even though bad things will happen to us in this human condition, it's very important that we don't take on a wounded role or identity.
Do you think there are wounds that people just can't come back from?
You know, I'm not sure that there's anything that people can't come back from, because we're told to count our blessings, and that's for a reason. We are blessed to be here, and if knowing and feeling and seeing and hearing certain things or the blessings we have, then we should be grateful for that, because I wear bracelets for fallen soldiers that gave it all up for these freedoms. And if they could speak to us today, I bet they would tell us to live it up with whatever we've got left.
Hmm. Well, in terms of healing, you know, you've got the physical healing, you've got the mental healing, and I think there's a spiritual healing that needs to happen as well. Is that what you have seen as in your own roles as you have developed this leadership style?
Without question. And if I hadn't been wounded so gravely, I wouldn't have learned as much as I have. You see, everything that I built up to become strong in my military career, most of it failed me because it's based on physicality and mentality that leans on your physical being and stature.
Mm.
And the things I had not developed were emotional. They had to do with love and compassion, which are the true strengths that we have.
Just real quick, got about a minute. What are the special challenges vets face as they heal physically, mentally, and spiritually?
The special challenge is to overcome our arrogance. We tend to think that we're good at something and we're tough, but dealing with the fact that we're not so tough, we were born drooling on ourselves and we wind up drooling on ourselves again in life, whether that's over years and decades or a traumatic event, we need to hug it out now and confess our limitations.
Great stuff. Okay, we do need to take a little break. Coming back, we'll have more with Sergeant First Class Greg Stubbe. His book is Conquer Anything, A Green Beret's Guide to Building Your A-Team. Say what? Selling or buying a home can be an intimate business. You've got open house days with strangers coming through. Maybe your finances are a little tricky. You need someone you can trust. But you also need someone who's tough, someone to get you the best price. Debbie McMillan is both tough and trustworthy. If you or someone you know is getting ready to move into, out of, or within the Mid-Willamette Valley, Debbie McMillan knows great homes and how to sell them. Debbie is with Berkshire Hathaway Home Services Northwest Real Estate Professionals. That's a mouthful, but all you need to remember is DebbieMcMillanHomes.com. That's Debbie McMillan, MCM, DebbieMcMillanHomes.com. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking to retired Sergeant First Class Greg Stubbe. He is the author of the new book, Conquer Anything, A Green Beret's Guide to Building Your A-Team. Absolutely fantastic book. He mixes some of his military stories in with life lessons and leadership lessons, and I just really can't recommend this enough. I'd like to talk a little bit now about the leadership side of things. Do you think good leaders know how to follow?
That's a great question. I think that leader development starts from the beginning. Some people think leaders are born. Others think leaders are created. I'm somewhere in the middle on that because I've witnessed both. I don't think I was born a great leader. I think I was turned into one and shaped into one. The unfortunate truth is that I wasn't a good leader until my leadership role was over. Because I realize more now that it's done, that I should have employed better during that time.
Well, I know that what you mean there is that there's a big argument actually within management circles and everything else too in terms of managers versus leaders, but then also whether you know a person is born with those skills or you can actually teach those. In terms of leaders following, you know, it's not always been my experience. Leaders lead and don't tend to want to follow, and I certainly think that that's what we see within the Republican Party. Certainly here in Oregon, you know, Republicans in Congress trying to undermine the commander in chief rather than become a supportive follower of the leader. Here in Oregon, we have Republicans that tend to divide each other to carve off their particular niche rather than get in with the others and all of us pull in the same directions. What advice would you give to leaders who find themselves part of a larger team or in a follower role?
Well, I think the bigger part of that is, are you a servant leader? Are you serving something greater than yourself with a leadership role? And to do it effectively requires, in my opinion, intellectual humility. The notion that what you don't know is far greater than what you do.
Yes.
So we really need to listen and support the greater good if we're actually serving something greater than ourselves.
Well, I certainly think that's very true with what we're seeing on the Republican side of things, is that so many of those guys in Congress just don't want to support the larger vision, and they're really trying to draw attention to themselves. I know you were wounded, so your career in the Green Berets was over, but how and why did you make the transition from a Green Beret to business and not some other field?
Well, I think that it's honestly a natural fit, and my attempt with this book is to demystify a lot of what we see in the Special Forces, SEALs, Rangers, because if you watch a movie about those things, most of us are enamored with the team dynamics and the leadership that's at play. But in the book, I try to break down the simple fact that they're far less military concepts than they are human ones. The characteristics, the interactions, the dynamics, they're all ours for us to seize. And those special ops teams get good at it out of necessity, life and death risk. But if you take it out of the pressure cooker and relax a little bit, you'll see that they're concepts we can all use to build our A-team in everyday life.
Well, speaking of A-teams, in the previous segment you had talked about that each member of that 12-member team has their own unique skills, but there's also some cross-training there where you've got basically two of everybody. That's very different, actually, from a lot of hiring right now within, you know, HR circles, is they really look for a person who's got very unique skill sets rather than a broader range. And that's different from where it was decades ago. Well, you really did want somebody that was cross-trained in a lot. In terms of applying that to business, do you find that is also very true, that Green Beret mindset of the A-team, to have that diversity and also cross purposes there within a business circle as well? Is that the most effective team?
Well, you're hitting on a key point for me, because within team dynamics, one of the things that I loved about the A-team the most is one thing you'll never, ever hear is, that's not my job.
Mm.
Because everybody does everything they can all the time. And that's a concept we should apply more.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. What type of person or manager or leader will most benefit, you think, from this book? Is it more towards current managers or leaders who need help becoming good leaders? Or is it geared more towards good leaders who are trying to be great leaders?
You know, I want to believe that this book has something in it for everyone, and that it can be helpful at any point throughout the leader development chain. I think that people aspiring to be leaders and who have been leaders, I think that there's something in it, simply because the examples that I take are not from my own expertise. They're things I got to witness in very serious situations.
Hmm. We got about a minute here with you. Was there any one particular thing that you look back on and say, if I hadn't gone through that, or if I hadn't experienced that, or if I hadn't witnessed that, do you think that you'd be a very different person right now?
Yes, I think my inability to see the qualities in my fellow person, the people I work with, I need to be less judgmental. How it happens is our absolute commonalities far outweigh petty little perceived differences.
Hmm.
And the person you like the least in your workspace is likely going to be the one that saves your butt. And so we really need to be bigger and see the value in them before it's too late and we wind up in a tragic situation. And realize that by the time we realize the good in them, it's probably just because they've done something good for us. And that's the wrong way to look at it.
Yeah. Well, I love the idea that everybody has value on that team, and that you can learn lessons from anybody. Again, the book is Conquer Anything, and we've been talking with Sergeant First Class Greg Stube. Thank you so much for your service, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
Up next, Scott McEwen, co-author of American Sniper. He's got a new book out, plus his thoughts on some new twists in the FBI Russian collusion. Is entrapment not a thing anymore? Tonight, Saturday, May 19th, is the 4th annual Fort Kennedy fundraiser. Fort Kennedy is a charity that provides transitional housing for homeless veterans. It'll be a fun-filled night with great food, silent auction, raffle, and more. Joining the fun 5 to 10 p.m. at Stadium Sports Bar on Southeast McLaughlin Boulevard in Milwaukee. It's free to get in. Enjoy a night out, some great food specials, and help our homeless vets. You should go. anytime between 5 and 10 tonight at Stadium Sports Bar on McLaughlin Boulevard in Milwaukee. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. I'd like to welcome best-selling author Scott McEwen back to the show. Scott, it's great to talk to you again.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be back home.
You know, since the last time we talked, we're now on three new stations around Oregon, KWVR and Enterprise, that's up in the northeast there, for those of you on this side of the valley, KWRO in Coquille, that's down on the southern Oregon coast, and KFIR in the mid-Willamette Valley, but reaching all the way up to the outskirts of Portland and down to Roseburg. Just to introduce you to new listeners, why don't you talk a little bit about where you grew up and how you ended up meeting Chris Kyle?
I grew up in right outside of Enterprise, a place called Heppner, Oregon, which you folks on the east side would know. Some of you on the west might not, but it's a beautiful little town, population 2,000 when I grew up, possibly a few less now that the mill is closed, right south of the Columbia River and right on in the Blue Mountains, as you go up into the Blue Mountains there. And also the John Day is very close as well, John Day River. So I grew up hunting and fishing and in the outdoors. Proud to say I was an Eagle Scout there and pretty much lived in the country every summer and really grew to appreciate not only the land and the outdoors, but also hunting, you know, with long range rifles. I moved down here to Southern California and practiced law here for 30 years in Southern California, corporate defense mostly, trial work. And then in 2009, I met Chris Kyle through some of my pro bono legal work that I did for the Navy SEALs and through another SEAL. And one thing led to another. I heard his story and felt that it was one of the most compelling military as well as family stories of military that I'd ever heard, and that led to the genesis and the creation of American Sniper, the book. We lost Chris in February of 2013, and the movie was made shortly thereafter with Clint Eastwood and Bradley Cooper, and I was consulting on the movie as well as working on the set. So a lot of things happened there.
Yeah, and it was just a fantastic movie. I thoroughly enjoyed that. The book, of course, is also excellent. Scott also has his own series of books called the Sniper Elite series. You've four books in that series already?
There is four books in that series.
And I know that there's another one coming out before too much longer. You've also got several nonfiction books up there as well. American Commander, we're going to try to talk about that in the next segment. But and we'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com. So if you want to check out Scott's books, just go to the store page there on iSpyRadio.com. And I want to talk to you, though, about your newest book, Camp Valor, Great Courage in the Face of Danger. And I'm just going to read a little bit from the publisher here. When Wyatt gets framed for a friend's crime, he thinks his life is over. But then a mysterious stranger visits him in jail with an unusual proposal. Spend 3 months in a secret government camp and have a 10-year prison sentence wiped clean. Wyatt agrees and finds himself in a world beyond his wildest dreams with teenagers like him, flying drones, defusing bombs, and jumping out of helicopters. This is no ordinary camp. Camp Valor is a secret training ground for teenage government agents filled with juvenile offenders who desperately need a second chance. If they can prove themselves over their three-month stay and survive Hell Week, they will enter the ranks of the most esteemed soldiers in the United States military. But enemies of the United States have gotten wind of Camp Valor, and they will do everything in their power to find out its secrets. Suddenly, Wyatt and his friends have to put their training into actual practice and find the bravery to protect their country. Sounds like an absolutely fantastic story. I mean, this is really such a different story in many ways for you, much more focused on the youth, and especially being brought into a military setting. Talk to us a little bit about how you came up with this story.
You know, the genesis of this story is over several years, and I always wanted to get into the young adult field of storytelling because I grew up on Nancy Drew and Hardy Boys mysteries and big fan of Johnny Quest and that type of genre that I just never really saw being done in the current, you know, offerings for our youth. And we see stories that are very, very successful, such as Harry Potter and rightfully so, and others, the Twilight series that are about vampires and things of that nature that our youth reads. But my idea was to write a story about youth that has a patriotic background to it and a patriotic, you know, flair to it that sure. gives our youth the right and, you know, to read and understand that backing this country in our schools and backing this country as young adults is okay. Because I think many times in our schools and other places, our education system has somehow lost that vision that it is okay to be a patriot and a supporter of the United States.
Yes.
And it really bothers me, especially here in California, to see so many of our youth, I believe, indoctrinated in a way that is not positive towards this country.
Oh, absolutely. I know very different times. Back when I was in high school, this would have been I would have loved to have had a book like this. So, of course, this begs the question, is there a program like this in the military?
You know, I don't know that there is a program that enlists younger than 18-year-old or should say 17-year-old people into our, you know, some people graduate at 17 and can get into the military ranks per se. But I do know that sometimes these individuals are key in giving information to the federal government on certain activities that they observe younger than 18. In other words, there's stuff that young adults tell the government that they know of in their own ranks that make a difference in law enforcement as well as espionage and things of that nature. So that's kind of the flair for the YA book. And also, it's a flair for the fact that these guys go through a SEAL team type training, a Hell Week type background. And it's kind of in respect and in honor to a lot of my friends that are SEAL, that are SEALs, that have had kids, that their kids grow up many times to be SEALs because they're just as tough as the old man by the time they hit 18. And so, you know, it's a different type of upbringing. It's a different type of, let's just say, discipline than sure. maybe we see nowadays in the coddling of our youth. I'm not saying one thing is better than the other, but I will say this. None of those SEAL kids grow up to be pansies, or as my dad used to say in Eastern Oregon, you know, it's a long ways from your heart.
Yeah,
you know, whatever your pain is, it's
well. And it's a cool idea. I don't know if I don't know if there is a program like this, but I love the idea of second chances, especially that the military would provide in this case for kids. All right, let's go and take a break. Coming up, we're going to ask Scott to put his lawyer hat on. We're going to be talking about Trump versus the swamp. Stay with us. This segment of the iSpy Radio Show is sponsored by Landmark Pacific. If you are in the market for a new building or have one and need some repair, check them out, landmarkpacific.com. And welcome back. We're talking today to Scott McEwen. He's co-author of the best-selling American Sniper. He's also an expert on the military tactics and strategy and training. He also has some nonfiction books out there as well. All of that can be found on iSpyRadio.com. Just look on the store page there. You can find his whole list of books, including his newest one, Camp Valor. Scott also wrote the book American Commander that happens to be about Trump's Secretary of Interior, former Congressman Ryan Zinke. And so, Scott, since you know Ryan personally, what do you make of all these attacks on him? I mean, they're saying that he's out there spending lavishly and he used the sirens to go to his favorite French restaurants. It just seems to me that the left is terrified of what he's doing to the environmental movement, especially since he's cutting off such a major source of their funding.
Well, Ryan has brought truth to an otherwise untruthful world. And, you know, and I know he's been attacked, you know, viciously by the left. And all I can say is every one of the claims that have been made against him, you don't hear the resolution because the resolution is in his favor. I remember when they were trying to say he was taking inappropriate flights and, you know, this and that, and that he was looking over a million acres of the Bears Ears Monument with a helicopter, God forbid. What is he supposed to do, take a mule over a million square acres, you know, whatever?
Yeah.
So it's just outlandish claims that I believe have been made about Ryan, because I know he's a patriot. I know what he stands for. And frankly, I know that he knows every single move he makes is going to be scrutinized and criticized by
yep.
the left. So,
yep.
you know, at some juncture, they, you know, they just hate him. Because he has essentially said that the federal regulations that have been so onerous on our ranchers, our farmers, our miners, our exploratory towards oil and gas, things of that nature during the Obama regime, he's lifted those restrictions.
Yep.
And he is unilaterally, I shouldn't say unilaterally, Obama put those restrictions in unilaterally with his pen and his phone, as he said. And you know what? The Trump administration, through Ryan and others, have lifted those restrictions, as they should, you know, for the United States.
Yes.
So that really upsets those that are out there, who I like to refer to as the eco-Nazis. And, you know, as a result of that, we're getting a lot of criticism of Brian and others in his position.
Sure. Well, he's a threat not only to their policy positions in terms of doing away with those regulations, but between lawsuits, the sue and settles, and actual direct funding for a lot of these environmental groups. I mean, he's essentially erasing billions of dollars that come through the taxpayers. I'd like you to put on your lawyer hat, though, for a moment, because the FBI is it's just gotten obscene. Not only are these investigations proving that there was no collusion between Trump and the Russians, but now we're finding out that the FBI set Trump up from the beginning. Some of the latest revelations are that the FBI used a professor over in the UK to feed Papadopoulos information about these so-called Russian emails, and then Papadopoulos then blabbed that information to yet another FBI so-called informant, which then gave the FBI the evidence they needed to start the whole investigation. More famously, Rod Rosenstein recommended to Trump that he fire James Comey as the FBI director. And then when Trump followed his advice, Rosenstein appointed a special prosecutor. It just goes on and on. So since when did entrapment stop being a thing?
It's truly, I mean, a lot of people have said it many times that this makes Watergate look like a walk in the park.
And yes,
I truly, truly believe that this is the most outrageous use of federal power against our own citizens that we have witnessed in our time, Mark. But certainly I'm not aware of another incident in the entire history of the United States at any time that even closely resembles what we're seeing here. And if an inkling of what you just said and what we know now is accurate in what the New York Times revealed yesterday was called Operation Hellfire Hurricane, in denoting the Rolling Stones song describing World War II. These guys have gone so far out of bounds that the number of indictments could well exceed 50, in my opinion, you know, of top level FBI, DOJ, and Obama people. I mean, like down to Clinton, et cetera. So, I mean, it's really, really outrageous what we know of thus far. And the only question I really have at this stage is, where is Jeff Sessions?
Yeah. Oh, I know. That's been my thing, too. It's like he's totally disappeared. And I know that he, you know, recused himself from the Hillary investigation. But that's the Hillary investigation. I mean, this, what we're really witnessing is just flat out law breaking by these law enforcement, these law enforcement agencies.
Yeah. And, you know, and a year. That what the New York Times came out with yesterday in their glib article on how you name operations, they had to admit that they knew about it. But, you know, this Hellfire Hurricane name that was given to this operation by the FBI. But this has been going on for a year before Mueller was ever appointed. The FBI was already in their moles, their infiltration, their wiretapping, all the things, their FISA warrants against U.S. nationals, which was totally not designed for that purpose. All the things that they were doing were taking place for over a year before Mueller was ever involved and before the setup was in place where Comey was fired and then Mueller, Comey's buddy, was appointed to take over the prosecution. This is as dirty as it gets, and it's as one-sided politically as it gets. And, you know, with all the information that we know of with the dealings between Hillary Clinton and the Russians legitimately, why is Mueller not looking into that issue?
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, it really is shocking the depth to which we are learning that the FBI has gone to go after a political opponent. I think that's the thing that's really shocking to me. Let's go ahead and take a break right there. Come back, I want to talk about these national security letters that we're just now hearing about. And we'll also ask Scott about the DOJ's Inspector General report that is looming on the horizon. Stay with us. Landmark Pacific is known for their outstanding steel buildings and general contracting. But did you know that they're also a fantastic choice to maintain your existing building? When new construction isn't an option, maintaining your existing pre-engineered steel building is absolutely imperative. Incorrect materials can greatly reduce the life of your metal roof. For metal re-roofs, repairs, or additions and remodels, call the experts at Landmark Pacific, 503-743-3256. That's 503-743-3256.
And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Scott McEwen. He's co-author of the best-selling American Sniper, the book that was later then made into the film with Clint Eastwood as the director. And he's got a new book out, Camp Valor. We'll link all of that up on iSpyRadio.com. We're talking today, though, with Scott about getting his background there as a lawyer. Going out of the break there, we were talking about these national security letters, and it turns out that this is this was really the authority that the FBI used to spy on Trump's campaign, and these are kind of a secret type of subpoena. And just a real quick blurb here, it says the FBI obtained phone records and other documents using national security letters, a secret type of subpoena. What can you tell us about these?
A national security letter is an administrative subpoena issued by the United States government to gather information for national security purposes that is never reviewed by a judge. Mm. In other words, the judge never gets to see these, which is a complete exception to the Fourth Amendment, which says that you must have a search and seizure must be reviewed by a judge in order to verify that happening. And this is a procedure that as we were speaking, I just looked it up to refresh my recollection. It's only been upheld once with the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which is referred to lovingly as the Ninth Circus Court of Appeals because they're so overturned by the Supreme Court. And it basically says that it has to be done in very, very limited terms and extreme urgency. In other words, this is not a situation where if you have the time to go to a judge, you can't not take that time. So if that's what the FBI is justifying here, this is another complete ruse that's going on here because they had more than enough time to go to the judge because they did it several times under very, very suspect circumstances with the FISA warrants that we know now was based on the false Steele dossier.
Well, the whole thing.
So it's just another ruse, Mark.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing just sounds like this complete setup to try to get Trump. The way that it's unfolding now is they had Papadopoulos, this basically he was an intern. They had sent him over to interview some professor over in the UK who then told him, and that professor was an FBI informant, who told him about these Russian emails. And then in the bar later, that's when he let slip that he knew about these Russian emails. Well, the guy that he let that slip to was yet another FBI informant. That then apparently became the impetus for a lot of this. So it sounds like a total setup right from the get-go.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was information obtained from an agent to be given to another agent. I mean, this is the worst I've ever heard. I mean, honestly, the worst we've ever seen or heard of is going on in front of our faces
yes.
right now. When we get to the end of this procedure, I truly believe it will go down in history as the most egregious use of internal power against our own citizens in the history of the United States. And I don't say that lightly.
Well, when you consider what they have gone through to try to get Trump, and when you go when you just look at the depths of this, I mean, depravity, quite frankly, it's no wonder they are fighting so hard to get rid of Trump because it's going to expose everything. I mean, how is it legal to plant a spy in a campaign to then plant evidence that you then use as the excuse to look for a crime? Can the FBI be facing some charges here?
I think the FBI could be facing charges from the top. I mean, that's what Comey, what amazes me is this Comey's going around on his book tour and he's admitting to crimes, in my opinion. I mean, I think that the way that these things and the brazen letting go of Hillary and the brazen, you know, decisions that were made by a law enforcement officer, not a judge, not a prosecutor, not a member of the judiciary, but of law enforcement to make these kind of calls. If this is the way we work here, then all of us are in danger. I mean, if they can do this to the president of the United States, then just think what they can do to you and me.
Yeah. Oh, I know. That's the really terrifying thing. So we've only got about a minute and a half here with you. In your opinion, what do you think of this looming IG report is going to be? Is it going to be a real investigation that leads to real prosecution of real criminals within the FBI that finally really holds people responsible? Or do you think it's going to be a nothing burger or maybe somewhere in between?
I think it's going to be real. And the reason I say that is this. There's already leaks coming out that the reason why the New York Times is leaking stories such as yesterday with the admission that there was a name given to this, for example, of Hellfire Hurricane, et cetera, is because there's people at the top that already know what's in this IG's report, and they know this thing is going to be pretty devastating to some people. And I think specifically, I think it's going to be devastating to Comey and to Loretta Lynch and to the whole Clinton investigation. Now, what else they reveal? at this stage, I don't know. But I do know this. The IG did a great job in the last report they issued. And I think that this one is going to be much more wide scope and much more damning, if you will, of those that did these dirty deeds. And so I believe that this IG report is also hopefully, and I really hope that this is true, giving Sessions the green light to go ahead and start his indictments. And I really hope that that's the result here.
I would sure hope so, because right now it just feels like the rule of law in America is just missing. And that's something that we have all learned to count on. And, you know, it's what we learned as kids, that, you know, the rule of law. But unfortunately, it seems like only the only citizens get this, not the actual government workers. Scott, I want to thank you so much for your time today. It's a fascinating discussion. As always, his newest book again, Camp Valor.
Thank you very much, Mark. ScottMcEwen.com.
That is all of our time for today. We definitely hope that you're at least a little wiser for having been here. Lots of information up on today's show page, Scott's and Greg's books, the text of that crazy IP43, which is the first step in gun confiscation and citizen disarmament, links to the Second Amendment Preservation Ordinance on Rob Taylor's website, and a bunch more. Check it all out, iSpyRadio.com. That's the letter I, not the thing you do the spying with, iSpyRadio.com. Be sure to share those. Every time you share a link on iSpy Radio, a liberal loses his wings. Plus, as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.